Welcome to the Sick Network Podcast, a weekly podcast discussing current and topical issues affecting Sikhs across the global diaspora.
Welcome to the Sikh Network Podcast. It's been a few weeks since our last episode, but no, we're back this week for another one. In particular, today we'll be looking at the Bloom Review that has been capturing the headlines over the past few weeks. Really going to be looking at what it was about, what its purpose was, and in particular, we're going to hone in on how it relates to kind of Sikhs within the report. And we're also going to talk about a counter report that was released last week by Sikhs in Law to actually counter some of the misconceptions that were in that original report. So a bit of a change today with our guests. Gone for this episode are Sikh Network regulars Jaz Singh and Mukamal Singh, but delighted to be joined again by Sikh Network members Manjindan Kaur and Manveer Singh. And also great to be joined by someone we haven't had for a couple of weeks, so always great to get him on, by Dabindrajit Singh. Waheguru Ji Ka Khalsa.
Waheguru Ji.
So, yes, the Blue Review, which has been something which has been sort of capturing headlines, I suppose, nationally and internationally over the past few months. And it's something I think we always want to talk about on this podcast, in particular its wider impact and the wider reasons of where some of these things, you know, where some of these things came from. So the Bloom Review, led by Colin Bloom, independent faith engagement advisor for the government. Purpose of the report was to look at how the contribution of faith groups could be improved whilst tackling harmful practice. It states more than 21,000 people responded to the public consultation and kind of laid some of the information about, you know, the kind of results that came out towards the end. Across a broad range of faith groups, it states on the website, including civil service, service and armed forces. And in particular, it was interesting from a Sikh perspective. There was 11 pages dedicated to so-called Sikh extremism, whilst kind of, I suppose, other faith issues, people, I suppose, white supremacy, which is a lot more prevalent, only had 3 pages dedicated to it. So I suppose, Dabindrajit, you know, we try to just give a broad synopsis of the report to people who may not be familiar with it. But yeah, just kind of your view on the background of this review, yeah. And obviously in particular, some of the kind of, I suppose, some of the outputs that came out of it. And like I touched on, the kind of the miss kind of proportion that's been given towards so-called Sikh extremism.
First thing, Sukhraj Singh, I nearly cheered when you say no Jaz Singh and no Mukamal Singh, because you wanted to be more interactive, but I thought I better get the footy.
Now the cat's out the bag, Badgie. I didn't want to say, but now you've gone there, I think there's a lot of relief now. Just joking.
But let's go back to Colin Bloom. I think in your introduction, you said he was the independent sort of reviewer looking at engagement with faith communities. That in itself is a question mark. And I know Manjindan was at the event last week in the House of Lords. And I think we should probably take issue with the word independent to begin with. Because to be independent, when you're looking at different faiths and looking at government, is clearly the government is a conservative government. And Colin Bloom is a former conservative councillor. He has stood as a member of parliament for Erith and Thamesway and lost. So first and foremost, he is a politician. You know, someone who stood for the Conservative Party as a member of parliament. Therefore, straight away, there's a question mark over his independence. Secondly, he's been the director of the Christian Fellowship or Foundation or whatever, which is basically to encourage Christians in the Conservative Party. So he's also not independent because of his own faith. He has to be very careful not to impose his own belief system on other faiths. And I think this came out in the report. So I think the first thing is the word independent. And straight away, if there's a question mark over Colin Bloom, you know, some of the other things that come later when we get into the detail is he went on BBC Newsnight the day he published the Bloom Review, which I think was 26th of April, if I'm not mistaken. And what he said, and it's there for everyone to see, he basically said, these are my personal opinions. So the 160 pages are his personal opinions, which are driven by the fact he is a devout Christian who happens to be a conservative. And I know when we talk about some of the details. Now, the other thing is, what was the exam question? The exam question was how to improve government engagement with different faith communities. That was the exam question. So where does even the word extremism for any faith come into this? You know, he uses, and I'm quoting now the Sikhs in Law report, I think they said he uses the word extremism in 50 different places in the report. And he also said there's no definition of extremism. And I think it was very good of Dr. Jasjeet Singh when he was giving evidence to the Sikhs in Law Council to say, actually, there is a definition, a government definition, the Prevent strategy. And I know Manjandan and I know Manbir will probably talk, because it might be an opportunity for them to talk about, you know, what that definition is and can it even apply to Sikhs.
Yeah, in terms of the definition of, so there's two. One is subversiveness and the other is extremism. And he, overall, the findings of the report show that there are, that the Sikhs in Law show that there is zero evidence put forward in Bloom's report on there being justification for applying those two terms to Sikhs. Extremism, I think, was referred to as something that undermined British values. And then there was a question mark over what are British values? Like, is that an explicit thing? I think that's what is referred to in the Prevent strategy, is it? And then the other, subversiveness. And that, let me just pull up what the definition was. So desire to destroy or damage a government or political system by attacking it secretly or indirectly. And, you know, and this is meant to refer to the British government, right? Not any other foreign government. So again, the evidence showed that there was no evidence to imply that Sikhs were subversive in any way. And definitely, you know, like what Baji has said, is about the question mark over Colin Bloom's independence. Was brought up as one of the first points in the review. So yeah, I found that overall the findings in the review was balanced and objective, but it's any supporter of the Bloom review would probably not take that view because they would be looking at it subjectively from positive. And I don't understand how you can find any credibility in the Bloom Review, particularly in that chapter, in chapter six, because it was literally ripped to shreds in the report.
Manjandan, just to come on the word, because obviously the word extremism, but if we stick to subversion, mm-hmm. you gave a definition there.
Yeah.
And what the report was really saying was that there's nothing that Sikhs do that, you know, trying to overthrow the state in this country.
Exactly.
Undermine the whole democratic process. And the examples he gave were Sikhs calling for a Sikh ethnic tick box or somehow subversion. You know, Sikhs not following the COVID guidance was somehow subversive activity. It's almost like he's mad.
I mean, that point,
these are legitimate things that you could do in a democratic society. If anything, you know, that's the exact opposite of subversion. It's about campaigning. It's about lobbying. It's about going to court. These were all the things we did in terms of the Sikh ethnic tick box. But I think what it did highlight was there are people like Colin Bloom, people in government, that clearly saw a different agenda, which was not the agenda people that lobbied about. It was about the census in this country. It wasn't about the census anywhere else.
Well, we've been at pains to talk about the ethnic tick box issue. And if case law is going to define you as an ethno-religious peoples, how can that be considered extreme? This is wild.
Well, no, subversive. There's a difference. It's subversion even worse than extremism. Extremism is about British values. Yes. You know, values of democracy, the rule of law, you know, tolerance and things like that. In fact, it was really interesting because when he gave interviews to Indian television, this was the other thing, his independence went completely out the window because straight away in this 160-page report, which might have had 11 pages on Sikh extremism, apart from Newsnight, Radio 4 Sunday, that Sunday, there was no other television coverage other than Newsnight, apart from one Indian channel after the other, and all he talked about was basically Sikhs. There was very little about Islamic extremism, virtually nothing about right-wing extremism, which is far more prevalent. And again, this probably goes back to why people that are close to the issue were saying, hold on a minute, if you look at who deals with extremism, it's the police and the intelligence services. Mm. And they've made clear a number of times, there's Home Office reports on this, that about 80% of all cases relate to Islamic extremism and 18% relate to right-wing extremism. There's 2% that relates to what's called single-issue cases. And they have categorically, in writing, confirmed, so we've checked, there are no Sikh cases. So if the police and if the intelligence services don't have any cases, he's really scraped the barrel if he thinks extremism, you know, he gives the example from Canada from like 40-odd years ago. Sorry, this was about UK government engagement with Sikhs in this country.
Yeah, he was definitely scraping the barrel. You know, he and even, you know, the point on violence or items like that. I mean, what place does that have in this report? Surely, you know, and this was a point made that any criminal activity should be dealt with by criminal law. And we have a very good system for that in this country. So there is no place for the government to need to intervene there. Not at all.
Yes, the system deals with it.
Yeah, it's taken care of. So why do you need to bring it into a report that talks about how should government do God, you know, and how should government interact with faith communities? It was just...
I mean, the other point being as well, if he's going to go onto Indian national television to discuss these points, why wasn't he going on to Myanmar's equivalent or Sri Lanka's equivalent in respect of Buddhist extremism? Why was he not going on to Tibetan news channels to do the same thing? Like, come on, it's the biggest own goal I've seen off the back of a report. You know, how anyone could suggest that this person is independent, quite aside from his own religious persuasions, which he's entitled to, but those things shouldn't come out into the report. And I feel, you know, the conclusions that came from the report was that faith is an overriding force for good. Government needs to improve its engagement. How can government honestly make any claim to engage with the Sikh community when it is saying in the report itself that only a pluralistic view to take into account the diversity of the Sikh view? If you have a look at any of the other faiths that are mentioned in there, there is a focus not so much on pluralism, but on established institutions on which to engage. Mm. But that doesn't apply for the Sikhs.
Yeah, we don't have that.
So, you know, and again, this is where it is marked.
Really interesting here is,
Sukraj, you've chosen for Dalek.
Yeah, Dalek.
Whilst the Dalek improves his health.
I think we're down to 28K now, aren't we? 28.8, isn't that what it was originally?
What I was going to say, whilst the Dalek becomes a human again, is the other big thing is about methodology, which we've not touched.
Yeah.
So the methodology, and I will talk about the parliamentary questions that Preet Corgill asked on the 6th of July and the responses which came on Friday, the 14th of July, before the presentation of the House of Lords, which they managed to get into the report. Those are very revealing. So one of the ones was, think about this, in October 2019, Boris Johnson appoints Colin Bloom as the independent faith advisor. He then kicks off what's called a call for evidence over a 28-day period. Now, I know, and most people know, that government consultations under normal circumstances are usually 90 days. So he chose a 28-day period. And one of the questions that Preet asked of the Cabinet Office was why only 28 days? And their response was, well, we got 21,000 responses. That's not the point. The point is, we have such a short window.
Did you see the breakdown of those responses?
Yeah, we'll come on to that.
Yeah.
The fascinating thing is the 160-page report did not provide a breakdown of the 21,000 at all. And actually, the question Preet asked was, can the Cabinet Office Minister, can the Secretary of State or Department of Levelling Up provide a breakdown by individual and organisation? And interestingly, all they've done is given a breakdown by faith. So of the 21,000, 354, top of my head, responses.
That's right.
Now, you could say that was just under 2%. That's not, you know, that's okay. I think the big number that's in there, which is 2,500 Hindus, which is 12%. That's phenomenal.
But it's not, I mean, the 350 is not okay, is it? It's like 1.69%. And that came above atheists, humanists, below the number of atheists, humanists, and pagans that responded.
So that agenda is our population is 1%.
Yeah.
So if 2 months, okay. This is why it's easy to defend the low number of Sikh Muslims for them by saying, actually, there's probably more atheists than Sikhs in reality of the population. But it's the relative comparison that Hindus might their population might be, you know, 60% higher than Sikhs. Why would you get seven times as many responses? And that implies a coordinated response, which you should have looked at. You know, even the response from the Muslim community, which has got four times the population of Hindus in this country, theirs was about 4,000 responses compared to 2,500. So this is a disproportionate number compared to other faiths.
Mm-hmm.
And given these anonymous comments that are there, you know, having a dig at Godwara's organizations, the Ananda Kaj, you know, various things in there. Well, if they've come from another faith community, then basically he's been using the report to almost promote hate. And he would never do this with any Islamophobic comments or anti-Semitic comments. And he's been allowed to get away with not only putting things in the report, then going on television to talk about it, which most independent reviewers don't do at all.
Outrageous.
So I think it's methodology, you know, one, the time frame, and then don't forget, it took 3.5 years for the report to come out. So if you've collected evidence back in 2019 and then published a report in 2023, most people would say, well, the world changes a lot in 4 years. We had the pandemic. We've had events in Leicester. We've had the Secretary of State for the Department of Levelling Up call for a public inquiry into the disturbances in Leicester. I've not had any public inquiries about anything Sikhs are doing in this country, ever. So there's something seriously amiss in terms of his personal opinions.
It is all about his personal opinions, isn't it? And okay, if it was somebody credible that actually was a scholar, that was independent, maybe you'd think, okay, maybe he's got something valuable that he could offer. But I don't know a single thing that would convince me that to go to Colin Bloom for advice on a topic such as this. You know, he's not a specialist here. So why is there such emphasis on, and he says it repeatedly, like the views are expressed in the report are my own. Okay. Why? You know, who are you? You know, other than just somebody a previous politician has appointed to do this work, under what pretense, we don't know. So he himself decided which views were deemed insightful to include in the report. On what basis? There's no basis for anything. As you mentioned, the methodology, another part of the methodology is some of the terms he uses, the true believer, the non-believer, yeah, and the make believer. And where have those terms come from? So now he is this scholarly person that can actually create these type of terms as well without any citation, any reference, any, you know, it is just laughable.
The question that comes up is often used in looking at the way Britain has, and its colonial past, is divide and rule.
Mm.
So actually, by creating division, which is what he's done in the report, you know, by having true believers, non-believers, and make-believers, this phrase, make-believers, invented by him, which is, they're the problems, not your true believers and not your non-believers. Your problems are your make-believers. In other words, people of faith that for whatever reason you don't like. And the interesting, and a lot of people have missed this, is when he talks about, and he's introduced this phrase, pro-Khalistan extremism, mm-hmm. what he says, there's nothing wrong for advocating for a Sikh homeland, Khalistan.
Mm-hmm. He does, yeah.
And what they're trying to do is even divide the Khalistanis into those that are legitimate and those that are extremists. Now, the point is, we just say, actually, there are no extremists, because you have to have the evidence to demonstrate extremism as defined in the Prevent strategy, which is they don't believe in the rule of law of this country, they don't believe in the democratic process of this country, they don't tolerate other people. And because there's no examples, the sorts of examples he gave, not in the report, but on Indian television or BBC Radio 4 Sunday programme, were, you know, if you don't support Khalistan, you know, you're shunned by the community. You know, that is not any definition of extremism. And then he mentioned, it still sticks with me, you know, and I know we talk about whether anything on the podcast is libelous, and I'm going to get into some controversy now. He talked about a ex-member, he wasn't clear whether it's an ex-member of parliament or an existing member of parliament, who was nearly in tears because of the way they'd been treated by, presumably, the Sikh community, because he was talking about Sikhs. So obviously, your first question, and I put this question to Preet Kaur Gill and Dhanmanjit Singh Desi, was, did Colin Bloom contact you? And the answer from both of them was, no. So two existing MPs he didn't approach, because obviously this was his personal, almost like, I want to say vendetta, and I'll say more about why it might be a vendetta. And I can guarantee you, and I could almost name the ex-MP, ex-Conservative MP, ex-Sikh Conservative MP. I don't have to name him now, people will work out. And, you know, he was a person that referred to Sikhs as the Taliban.
Hmm.
And therefore, you know, the Sikh Federation, for one, campaigned against him, and he lost his seat.
But what does that, you know, what are those anecdotal cases have? What place do they have in a report like this? Is exactly the question.
I think it just reinforces that because he had a conservative background, he mm-hmm. went to people he knew mm-hmm. that would give him the sorts of things he could use anonymously. And the other thing that sort of really struck me about the whole approach was those parliamentary questions that Preet asked about, did he interview people from the 21,000 respondents? And the minister said, we don't know who he interviewed. We don't know what evidence they gave him. We have no record. This is a government minister that's saying, we appointed somebody, but we don't know where he's got the information from. And it really makes you think that, you know, I know Sikhs in Law mentioned about reference to Wikipedia and things like that. So you ignore Dr. Jasjeet Singh's report, no mention at all, but you happily quote Wikipedia or
an editable source, an editable source called Wikipedia. Marvellous. I mean, Polly, I'll carry on your lead here. I mean, if you have a look at some of the quotes that go into the Bloom Review, now, as part of his call for evidence and a respondent that he quotes in there, even that in itself is quite contradictory, but you'd only appreciate that if you were from the community. Obviously, we have committee systems, for better or worse, within our Gurdwara. These people are voted in. Mm. Who votes in the Gurdwara elections? The members of the Gurdwara. I mean, this is all pretty simple, basic, non-confrontational, non-controversial stuff. But of course, he includes a quote from a said respondent with no names or where they might come from or anything, just the respondent. And I quote, only minority Sikhs are causing divisions and hate. Majority are peace-loving, but these minority are controlling leading Sikh temples in England and using funds raised for worship for propagating Khalistan, the breaking up of India, and openly do that on social media. Do they really? In any case, I'll continue. All are allowed to express their views and raise concerns of any injustice in India, but spreading hate and brainwashing Sikh youth is matter of serious concerns, and many temples are allowing organizations to have youth camps where some are trying to recruit youth to follow their hate, terror, and division agenda.
The only thing I'll say, Manfi, is the reason why I don't really read out any of these quotes is because I think we're promoting what he says. And it's promoting hate against Sikhs. Yes, so,
absolutely.
But the important thing is, though, the call for evidence was a call for evidence from people of faith or no faith about how government could engage better with their particular faith community or non-faith community. And therefore, there wasn't a question that allowed you to give that answer. There just simply wasn't.
Yes, so, sure.
Just ask them how they can engage better. Why?
Well, yeah. And that's my point, isn't it? That actually, one, if it's only a minority, how do these so-called extremist Sikhs become leaders of Gurdwara? One. Two, if you are worried about engagement of Sikhs, why don't you engage with the Gurdwara? Surely they are the best custodians of the faith in this country that can give you some guidance. Maybe send a minister, one of the faith ministers, to the biggest Gurdwara in the country. Maybe send them to some of the smallest ones. Take a balanced view. Surely that would give you some kind of insight as to how the community actually works, rather than approaching it from this position that he has, which he seems to have biased the entire report with.
Shall we get really controversial, Mandy? This is close to Hentam and Chanda. So I'm not going to quote it because I haven't got the report in front of me. But basically, he also says, I appreciate that Gurdwaras have elections and they do select committees, but sometimes they select committees that are pro-Khalistan. And I can guarantee you, I know the Conservative councillor and which Gurdwara that Conservative councillor is talking about, because her father used to be the president there and is no longer the president there. Mm. You know, and that's the whole point. We can even work out the sorts of people he's spoken to within the Conservative Party that are holding a grudge against elected committees, you know, because they have been elected by the congregation or the Sangha. And that's why having anonymous things and the government trying to form, make decisions about recommendations that Colin Bloom might have made, I've got a feeling it's a bit like, you remember the race report where they said there is no such thing as institutional racism. Basically, that report just died a death.
Yes.
Because it's a huge outcry. Here, I think the dilemma we've got is huge outcry from the Sikh community about what Colin Bloom did in reference to Sikhs relative to other faiths. I think there is, and I have talked to people of other faiths who are almost like quietly critical. You know, they find it odd because on the one hand, we are a model community. You know, we do all these wonderful things that all politicians talk about. You know. Even Colin Bloom talks about occasionally in his report. But then it's the disproportionality. You know, reports have to be balanced. And it's that disproportionate focus on something that just doesn't exist.
Yeah, I just, it beggars belief that a report like this even sees the light of day. I mean, who would have reviewed this? Who had reviewed the review before it was, or checked it? Let's use a better word. Who would have checked it before it was issued and published? It's, you know.
It is quite dangerous. It is, you know, and as you said, Budgie, other reports like the race report have been, you know, voided, so to speak. But this one is already starting to cause issues because people are starting to refer to it, and it, you know, I think that's what some of the community members that attended the event at the House of Lords said, that this is starting to cause issues at local level because organizations are starting to, government organizations and public bodies are starting to reference things from it. So it's quite a dangerous thing, and it needs to be expunged, you know, like it needs to be voided and pulled from public records because, as you said, it's spreading hate. It's not doing any good. It's, you know, the council found that it actually a blueprint for how the government should not do God.
Not. Yes. Know?
So it's, yeah.
But it's even worse than that, Majinder, because when you're at the front line of Sikh engagement with government and when it's not been working for about 5 years, this report comes along, which is supposed to be an answer, not just for government, but for faith communities. It's like a kick in the teeth for us. And I know the Sikh Federation responded really quickly, 1st of May, into the Bloom Review. And in there, it was 7 or 8 pages, and I just didn't put the detailed references, but I'll give you the example. So various issues have come out over the last few years about bullying of Sikh children at schools. You know, the infamous video, you probably remember. And so we wrote to Gavin Williamson, the Secretary of State for Education, about that incident. And he agreed to meet. On 3 occasions, he agreed to meet. And each time, it was cancelled last minute. So we put a freedom of information in, and guess whose name comes up that blocked the meeting? Somebody called Colin Bloom. We have it in black and white in a freedom of information request. So in other words, what was subversive or what was extreme about a Sikh child being bullied and raising it with the Secretary of State for Education? It's just, you know, and that's why I'm saying that actually, and he says this in the report, that although it's taken a long time to come out, government's already been acting upon it.
Mm.
He makes that comment. He said it in interviews as well. And quite separately, it's very odd that Tom Tugendhat, the security minister, has written a letter to Conservative MPs. We've seen that letter, where he says, there is a dedicated team in the Home Office that is looking at pro-Khalistan extremes. And that same phrase, PKE, even uses the initials. Same thing in Colin Bloom's book. Now, that dedicated team was there before the Bloom Review came out. And what is the dedicated team there to do? To disrupt. Now, what form of disruption does it take? Because in the same letter, he says, but the risk is deemed low. Well, I'd go further. The risk is non-existent. And this is all about appeasement to the Indian government. There's no two ways about it. So I think what Colin Bloom's done, I don't think he's invented the phrase PKE. He's been told to put it in there. And the fact that, you know, ministers are using the phrase, but saying it's low risk is, you know, I'm sure there are people in the Indian High Commission and probably sitting in Delhi that might listen to podcasts like this. Well, actually, they're being made a fool of as well by the British government, because there is no extremism. There's nothing they can do about it. And to keep India happy, they sort of, we've got a dedicated team within the Home Office that's looking to disrupt activities. Now, you could talk about, is that about the raids on Sikh youth home? Is it about the attempted extradition of three British Sikhs? Those are real disruption techniques, don't get me wrong. But the point is, it goes back to this thing of the way the British government is operating almost at the behest of the Indian authorities, no different to 1984.
Yeah.
And therefore, you know, calling out Colin Bloom opens up a whole can of worms about how government really engages with Sikhs, full stop. Historically, and even now in 2023 and going forward. One of the things that, you know, we need to probably use the podcast to get out to people is, when is Britain going to, you know, show a bit of courage and nerve and call out publicly what's wrong in India? Americans are doing, Canadians are doing it. What's wrong with the Brits? You know, they left 75 years ago.
Conservatives would require a backbone to do that, some kind of moral spine. And, you know, as much as we don't like it, buddy, I will call it out as it is. This current government, I'd call it the Johnson era plus, has had no moral spine on any basis. That's probably a discussion for another day. But it is in keeping, actually, of what has happened over the last few years domestically, I suppose. And I suspect that, and this might not be in keeping with what, you know, you might feel or others might feel, but this sort of behaviour, spineless, you know, lacking backbone, is par for the course, because this is the type of politician we have now. And the saddest thing is, the harshest lesson for this sort of insipid behaviour should be taken from 84. That actually, despite all the machinations to try and obtain a trade deal on weapons, etc., what they were really going for was around gunships and helicopters, which was mothballed because of the actions that took place by brave Sikhs in November 84 and just prior to. And I suspect that all of this, you know, lack of spine, lack of backbone, to use the Sikh community in the UK as fodder at the death knell of trade, shall come a cropper once again.
Yeah, I think we're in danger without our host controlling us. We'll go all over the place. But if we get back to the Bloom Review, I think we talked about, you know, independence, we talked about methodology. I've just got a feeling, and this is getting now real, that although Sukrad said in the introduction that, you know, it's made headlines, and Majunda said it is being acted upon locally, I think it's how do we as a community going forward get, not probably the current government, because I'll be brutally honest, the current government probably has got no more than a year left in them. But how will an incoming government deal with anything left of the Bloom Review? Apparently he's retiring. Apparently he's told people that this report will be kicked into the long grass because obviously Rishi Sunak's got a few other issues on his plate at the moment. It's not one of his five priorities, dealing with the Bloom Review's recommendations. And so absolutely, I think the standard response that's come from the Faith Minister is the government will have to respond to the recommendations. And I think there's a particular recommendation in the report which relates to Sikh extremism. And I think we probably can't get the whole Bloom Review withdrawn because obviously it's 160 pages. We're concerned about obviously how it impacts upon the Sikh community. But I think it's a reasonable ask for either the current government or any new government to completely ignore that recommendation because it's not based on any evidence whatsoever. And if the government of whichever colour comes in wants to appease India by accepting recommendations, well, actually, they're not doing what's right for Britain, which is if there are real threats, then your resources should be dedicated to those real threats. And there is no threat. Never has been a threat to British values, the democratic system. And I think elsewhere I said, I've wrecked my brain. So when was the last incident in this country where somebody challenged British authorities? And it's Shahid Udham Singh. He's the last person, I would say, in revenge for Jallianwala Bagh, took action against Britain. We've seen no attacks, no threats to Priti Patel, Bob Blackman, all these people that spread hate and make vile comments, because that's not just the way we operate. We operate within the law of this country. We may raise our voices as we legitimately can. So I think the key message to this is probably for an incoming government that they need to probably definitely get rid of that recommendation as one of whatever 24, because I think it's then there for political reasons. No more, no less. Either with a conservative angle. And I might expand upon this. One of the things we said is we've had a conservative government for the last 13 years. Coalition to begin with. And in that period, we've had 2010, the issue of seat turbines being checked at airports, 2014, the disclosure of papers. We had the defensive weapons bill. We've had the census issue. We had a whole range of issues where we've challenged government. But the point is, it could have been a Labour government. We would have challenged them as well. This is not about, you know.
But that's the point of a democracy, isn't it? Like, that's what that's what a democratic system is there for, checks and balances. But, you know, when it comes to this report, look, as Manbir said, there doesn't seem to have been any checks and balances. Like, how can a report like this be put in front of government? No citations, no evidence, no, you know, checked methodology, nothing. It's just crazy. And it's contradictory throughout, you know, even in when it describes Khalistan or pro-Khalistani extremism, you know, as we said, it says actually it's okay to be Khalistani. And then it says, no, it's not. But it doesn't say why it's not okay to be Khalistani. So it's just very confused. It's a very confused narrative. And that's why I say, like, it's not credible and it shouldn't have any recommendations. Like, I don't understand why the Minister for Religion would be pressing for the government to provide a response when has he read it? Has he checked it? Has anybody checked any sources? That's what doesn't make sense to me. Like, I mean, if you think about writing a dissertation at university or a paper, this wouldn't get through. Right? Like, this, it would have red marks all over it. And it's just, it's crazy.
It reminds me, I've told this story, I might as well tell it now on podcast. So the Faith Minister is actually Jane Scott, Baroness Jane Scott. But a previous Faith Minister, and Manbir will know him, is Lord Bourne. Mm-hmm. And there was a classic example in one of these meetings where I think I missed one of the meetings, and Dr. Sajid Singh said he's going to have a go because of he likes a good gender mix at the meeting.
Yes.
Absolutely right. No problem whatsoever with that. And so we went into this meeting, and there were 7 Sikhs there, 2 female, 5 male. And he comes in, shook his head, and said, it's not good enough. And obviously, you know, there's one person that can come from one organization. So you can't send a male and a female. We suggested that every org should send one male and one female then. Mm-hmm. And so I just said to him, sorry, Lord Bourne, can you leave the room and send me a female minister? Because all the ministers in this department are men, and the Conservative Party reduced the number of female MPs. Mm-hmm. You're only at 23%. And he never raised that issue again. And the thing is, you have to treat these ministers with respect, but also put them down through their own language. Because I remember the very first roundtable meeting he walked into. It was the day after the infamous Leamington and Undergard issue. And he came into the room. He didn't look to see who was in the room. There was me from the Sikh Federation. There was Randeep Singh from the Sikh Network. And there was Jasveer Singh from City Sikhs. And he came into the room, and you won't believe this. He said, I'd like to thank you for welcoming President Modi. And it's like, sorry, Prime Minister. And all three of us did not welcome him. Even Jasveer didn't welcome him. They initially welcomed him and had to withdraw it. And then he went on to talk about interfaith marriage. And we said, we don't have a problem with interfaith marriage. Just can't have an undercard between, you know, it has to be between two Sikhs. So don't comment on issues you don't know anything about. And this was the faith minister. And those are the sort of competencies of the ministers that are given this portfolio. They're usually often very junior, usually from the House of Lords. And don't even get me on the subject of a previous faith minister who would only invite Conservatives to roundtable meeting, or people would say yes to whatever they wanted to do during the pandemic. So I've got no faith in the ministers that are responsible, because, you know, the shadow faith minister is an MP from Luton, Sarah Owen. And actually, she's a, although her name's Sarah Owen, and most people would think she's, you know, from the indigenous community. She's not. She's actually Chinese. Mm. It's Sarah Chi Liu Owen. And actually, she probably understands much better about how sometimes people almost use their own interpretation of their own faith to say, you need to fit into this system. And I think that came out in the report, which I hadn't really appreciated about, you know, how Christianity and Judaism, you know, is a belief system, but they don't understand Eastern faiths like Sikhi as a way of life. And if you don't understand that, then you will never understand why Sikhs do what they do, and you know, teachings about gurus, opposition to, you know, standing up for people's rights. It's just alien to them. And therefore, having an author that doesn't understand that just means, you know, he could be of any faith, but the thing is, you have to then really be qualified to understand if you're going to comment on it. If you're not qualified, and if you've got your biases, and I think there are some biases, and I'll say one, you know, it was Colin Bloom who advised Robert Jenrick as the community secretary who the Sikhs' faith leader should be in the pandemic. And apparently at the London Faith Forum, he admitted that was a major mistake he made. Now, how can these people that are really just officials be given so much power? And another thing that wasn't in the report, because it was a parliamentary question that they missed, Preet also asked, what did this cost? And it cost £225,000. And it's basically his salary for 3.5 years. It's broken down by year. So he's been paid, you know, $250,000 to deliver this rubbish, as far as we
can. Sounds, it seems like easy money, it would appear, Pudgy. Easy money. I also, Unfortunately, I wasn't able to attend the Sikhs in Law review. And I just wanted to check in. All of our ministers, including Piers, attended the event, didn't they? So you had your Lord Sahota, your Lord Singh. I'm presuming, and correct me if I'm wrong, Rami Ranger attended, did he not? Or did he avoid
it?
No, he didn't attend it. Did Lord Suri attend?
MPs and there were two Sikh Lords, I think. That was probably it.
It was just Lord Sahota and Lord Singh for a few minutes.
So he didn't get a full quota of our representatives, I guess, then.
Yeah, for I think also, well,
right.
And Baroness Fadma is the other potential peer, but both Sikh MPs were there. But don't forget, these two Sikh MPs weren't even consulted by Colin Bloom.
Which is where we're going with this.
Sota wouldn't have been as even Lord at the time. I doubt if Lord Suri was. I suspect Lord Singh was, based upon what he said, which we don't really need to go into, because I think he was broadly, on the one hand, showing elements of support for the Bloom Review, although, as Satwinder Jass pointed out to Radio 4 Sunday programme, you know, he was the one that first one to be quoted in the press criticising the Bloom Review for its overemphasis on Sikh extremism.
Sounds almost as confused as Bloom, really.
Yeah, despite the claims of the report that there's division and there's sort of some sort of power struggle between the Sikhs, there was, I feel, the response has been unanimous from the Sikh community to this report, that it is unjustified, even from that first criticism from Lord Singh. So it's shown that, right? Like it's not acceptable.
Yeah.
I think, because I think Sukhra just put it in the chat, hasn't it, about he made a big emphasis about divisions within the Sikh community because they're trying to fit us into a model which doesn't work for our faith.
Yeah, and if he's talking about divisions in the community, there aren't divisions. There are different viewpoints, as there are in any faith group, as there are in any community. You know, and I don't think we're saying here that we're not advocating for one group to be consulted. We're advocating for a range of groups and a range of views to be consulted for then those in, you know, decision making positions to make balanced decisions.
Mention the two, you know, other faiths have faith leaders like, say, the Archbishop of Canterbury, the Chief Rabbi, and it suits government to be able to have a faith leader.
Person.
And I think all the Sikh community says it's alien to us. It doesn't exist. There's the Akal Takht. But as far as the UK concerned, you have to deal with the cross section of the Sikh community, you know, the Gurdwaras, the organizations. Now, it makes absolute logical sense that if government want to engage on faith, you know, the guru defines ultimately who should represent us, which is practicing Sikhs, if it's a faith matter. If it's a matter to do with, say, I don't know, organ transplants or something specific, there are suitably qualified people from our faith community that could advise them. You know, you won't send lawyers along to talk about it. Hopefully you get somebody with appropriate qualifications that know something about organ donation, etc. And thing is, we have people in all walks of life. Therefore, different parts of government, depending on what input they require from the Sikh community, have to deal with that cross-section. You can't deal with one person. You can't even deal with one organisation.
Are we saying, in terms of their engagement, the government needs to stop being so lazy, frankly, that it has to get off its rear end and go to the extent of engaging with that cross section? Otherwise, what are they expecting, that the Jathedar of the Akal Takht appoints a British delegate that it sends across to do its cross-sectional work for the British government. I mean, this is ridiculous. They can't expect, you know, the community to continually fix gaps within their own systems that aren't fit for purpose. That's what they need to take away from this report.
If you were starting this whole thing again, say the exam question was, how does government work better with different faith communities? Actually, the answer would have come from the community.
Yeah.
So the Sikh community's answer would be entirely different to the Christian community, entirely different to the Jewish community, entirely different to the Muslim community. And the answer would be right for all of them, but there would be separate answers. The answer is the solution within the
community. The thing is, I think the government has enough data to go on to be able to make some pretty decent decisions in terms of previous situations that have happened, you know, like the handling of the pandemic in the UK. You know, what obstacles did they overcome? Like, just do a lesson learned and you will find better ways to engage with the community. It doesn't take this type of exercise to be able to do that. And I think it does come down to the inadequacy of the people put in certain positions to carry out these tasks. You know, was Colin Bloom told, here, write this report, and in it, weave in how this particular people are causing issues, not for us, but for another overseas governmental body, right? It's, you know, it depends what his job was. And if that's what it was, then wouldn't any legitimate, rational thinking person turn around and say, well, hang on, but let's actually sit back and think about what we're trying to do here. Why do we want to do this? And actually propose a better way forward for better cohesion between various communities in the UK. That wasn't done.
I've always, you know, Chandan, it's a great point you raise. And I've always wondered, you know, let's say the last 10 years that I've been involved in some of these spaces, I've been fortunate enough to contribute, is that they've got one faith minister dealing with and impacting the lives of millions of people belonging to faith. Mm. And the complexities of juggling all different viewpoints, you know, and within a faith, let alone across all, let's say, 6-7 major religions that are in this country, and the obvious that no religion, the atheists as well. Wouldn't it be better organizationally to have a junior minister sitting under the faith minister that's dedicated to a particular religion to go out and do the work and actually understand it? I mean, surely that would make sense.
Yeah. If you want to
establish the relationship. Here we are, junior minister. You go speak to the Sikhs. Go speak to the Hindus. Go speak to the Muslims. 6-7 of them. Let's get better outcomes.
But the thing that's missing, though, from the report is, how does government currently engage with different faith communities? It's missing. You know, because what I'd say is, what you've said, Manveer, is too simplistic. Because
yes, it is. Indeed.
I'll take two of the faiths. Let's take the Christian faith. You know, the Archbishop of Canterbury and the bishops sit in the House of Lords.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They directly influence laws. And we've seen in recent weeks, the Archbishop of Canterbury has gone almost, he's allowed to, and he has gone to the House of Lords and has, you know, challenged the immigration bill. You know, because it's inconsistent with teachings, and good on him. But the point is, you can't apply that to the Sikh faith, you can't apply that to the Hindu faith, the Buddhist faith, etc. Now take the Jewish community. You know, ministers, and we know this through experience, you know, ministers, say, in the Foreign Office, have a set quarterly meeting at ministerial level in the Foreign Office with the Board of Deputies.
Mm.
So actually, if you'd set out in this report, how does government engage with existing faith communities? You know, someone could turn around and say, well, actually, the Jewish community is much smaller than the Sikh community. We don't get a look in with ministers in the Foreign Office because it's about Israel and India. Simple as that. And it's about who you know and who's in power and who the politicians are. And so I just think, you know, if your question is, how can we do it better? Well, explain how you do it now.
Hmm.
And what they'll
surely
find.
That's where you start. Yeah.
You know,
with any situation.
They do it. What they want is, if I was really critical of the system, is what they've done for a number of years is that what was the department for whatever it was, communities, housing, and local government, with the word communities in there, with the faith being part of it. Now is the Department of Leveling Up, Housing and Communities. It's just a piddly little one department. And as soon as you raise an issue, whether it's to do with Jagdar Singh Jol, you know, what's happening to Sikhs in Afghanistan, because we've seen this, they try and control it all from a department that has no influence on it.
Yeah.
You know, and therefore, I think the whole system, government system, it could be anyone in power, is it's designed to control faith communities to be the least burden to government. And for those faiths that have more influence, they'll bend over backwards. And they set up meetings at ministerial level. And for us, it's almost like, you know, it's easy to deal with the Sikh community because we'd say, oh, well, they're divided, they're all over the place. Actually, we're not. You know, 95% of the issues, actually, when it comes to our faith, we're not divided at all.
No.
You know, and I mean issues to do with government dealing with our faith, not, you know, internal matters to do with the Sikh community. Those are internal matters, just as there are in every other community. This is about what government does and how it interacts. I've been doing some thinking around not just faith communities, but actually ethnic minorities in general. And actually, government and politicians need to take a hard look at issues like discrimination, equal opportunities, hate crime, because that's a common theme. It doesn't matter who your faith is. You know, if you are a minority, and doing some really interesting analysis around, you know, the population of this country is such that there now are, you know, 30 or 40 constituencies where the ethnic minority population is more than 50%. You know, yes. Some are 80% now. And you'll be surprised at how number of members of parliament from those constituencies where the population of ethnic minorities is 50, 60, 70, 80% don't look like the 50, 60, 70, 80%. And it's a really interesting analysis because actually those ethnic minorities, which invariably are going to be linked to faith as well, and not to the host faith, to often a foreign faith, if I can put it that way, they face those challenges of discrimination, career progression, hate crime, you know, and being treated fairly. And actually, the heart of this is the political system. The way it's set up is it's there for the people that are part of that system. And whilst it's changed, great, we've got two Sikh MPs and we'll have lots more. It's very eye-opening when you look at some of those numbers. And that's only going in one direction. You know, so even, and I'm using census data here, by the time we have the general election, there'll be another 15 constituencies with ethnic minorities being the majority, and virtually all their members of parliament don't look like those ethnic minorities. The problem is, therefore, they have to get much better at dealing and engaging with communities, faith communities, or the community as a whole.
Maybe the intention, if we try and look at it objectively, how can government do God? Like, maybe the intentions behind that were good, you know, but it's the execution has not been right. So, yes, I think what we're saying is we're very open. And it's great that government is asking themselves this question because they need to. from what Baju said, like they do need to, and but not just with faith communities, not just how does government do God. It is about communities, ethnic minority communities, ranging over communities like that. It's how do they engage with it? And they haven't got that sussed, it doesn't sound like.
I guess, Baju, back to your point, it's the rise of the ethnic majority that's coming to the fore. And, you know, I certainly think that politics for Sikhs will become, hopefully, more, you'd anticipate Sikhs becoming more influential based on the pure numbers that will be representative in the House of Commons come the next cycle of Parliament after the general election that's called. I also come back to the point that I always hear this comment from the Conservative government over the last, you know, 10 years or so that they've been in power, is that, you know, there are these divisions amongst the Sikhs. I mean, if we're talking about a community of people, there's 354 Conservative MPs, and I doubt you could get all of them, just 354 of them, to agree on a view on a variety of things. So it's quite bizarre that same entity then looks for unison amongst a community that spans almost 700,000 people. Naturally, you are going to get a wide variety of views. And I think, in summary, the Bloom report, it's not fit for purpose. It needs to be pulled. It needs to be expunged. You know, it's not worth the paper it's written on, quite aside from the £225,000 that it costs to produce. And I think it's highly commendable that Sikhs have set aside their differences from their various political persuasions, etc., to come together, show some unity, and actually en masse just completely dismiss the report. And from that, we should take positives. I think the methodology that's been used to challenge it so successfully and so totally, I guess, is something that we should use as a community to go forward. And if there is something critical that comes from government, be that SNP, Tories, Labour, Liberal Democrats, or anyone in between these political spectrums, any one of these represented on the political spectrum, this is a great method to come together and say, agreed or not. And I think we should do it in respect of all of these reports where Sikhs are mentioned, or, as we've seen before, where Sikhs should have been mentioned but weren't. And I think this starts producing a body of work going forward that can be relied upon as sustained and actually showing a representative view of the Sikhs, which is what, to be honest, the community really wants at the government table. And, you know, there are always going to be those in the minority that have a contrarian view to the majority, but even that should be heard as well. And that ultimately comes down to the fact that we need to be recognised as having a different approach in terms of our leadership with regards to faith. And that should be accepted by, the faith minister. And I think they must do more, and they must resource that department appropriately. You know, this notion of saying that having the ideology of Khalistan is not in itself extreme, but then to simply call it extreme at every opportunity, again, is confusing, and it is not okay. It can't be the case that we accept views like that. And I'm so glad that Sikhs in Law, the collective of Sikhs that brought together to review the Bloom Review, has absolutely dismissed it. And I guess we should all look forward to seeing this sort of thing going forward. So on that note, I think
that... Do you want to wish Colin Bloom a happy retire?
I mean, I hope he has a retirement and a pension that represents the cost to the taxpayer that he's given for the bill of this work over the last 3 years. Tremendous work by Colin Bloom. Fantastic. And on that wonderful positive note, I think we'll bring the podcast to the conclusion. So let's all come together and say Vaibhiji Ka Khalsa.
Vaibhiji Ka Khalsa.
And yeah, let's look forward to the next podcast.
Welcome to the SICK Network Podcast, a weekly podcast discussing current and topical issues affecting SICKs across the global diaspora.